This is Ken Lubin, the host and founder of the Executive Athletes Podcast, and welcome to this week's episode. I want to thank everyone that's been listening, and thank you for the comments and feedback. They're awesome and an incredible help in this journey to making this podcast better and better each episode. Once again, this is unscripted and unedited, as I believe it is the best way to get to really know the guest. Today's guest is Elise LeHue. Elise is the general manager of Sky Blue FC, the National Women's Soccer League New York, New Jersey franchise. She previously was the GM of the Chicago Red Stars, worked with the Seattle Storm, and co-founded a major international girls soccer and leadership academy across Chicago, Mexico, Houston, and Colombia. She is one of the only two women currently holding the title of general manager in the NWSL and is the first woman in league history to serve as a general manager in both women's professional soccer, the WPS, and the NWSL. She also has an extensive and impressive track record of community development and volunteering. Elise is a leading voice on diversity in all areas, as well as an important voice on increasing gender diversity in leadership positions across sports. She is also curator founder of the only online women's sports business weekly newsletter, Women's Export. So Elise, welcome to the show.
Hey, Ken. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
So tell us a little bit about who Elise is from your own, you know, your own words, right? Putting you on the hot spot of, you got to brag a little bit. So here we go.
I don't know if I can top your intro. I said, that sounds fine. You know, it's like, I was sitting here thinking, how did I have time to do all that actually?
Right.
Thanks for making me sound fancy. I always appreciate that. Very, very kind of you. But yeah, I've always had a keen interest, I guess, in the full spectrum of soccer and in women and girls soccer in particular, from a nonprofit to kind of the executive side. So I find ways to keep myself busy, I guess, is a good way to put it. And I'm always looking to learn and grow in my role. I've been around long enough to know that I don't know enough. And so I always want to grow in my role and try to be a better leader, whether it's for my staff or players or the community, even as a representative of a club. So always trying to learn and grow and evolve. And that sometimes means for me getting outside of my comfort zone sometimes or taking on other projects. So, if some of my background sounds diverse, I think it's just my own interest in learning and growing as a, both as a person and as a leader of a club.
And I think too, and I love what you're saying about always learning and always growing, right? I think that's a sign of a true leader versus sort of a manager, so to say. It's, you're always looking, how can I become better? How can I get my people to become better? How can we do it together? And I give you kudos for that. And I love that. And I think that's, you know, probably that's super cool. And I think one of the most important traits of leadership.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I think so as well. You've got to put, people around you that are smarter in each position. That's how a club's going to grow. So, you know, in terms of my staff, I want those creative people, those big thinkers, those big dreamers like I am in all of the roles. And, you know, I always say, even when we have interns come on board, and we have kind of a unique program right now, and we're actually doing remote internships. So we've got 10 remote interns that are across our digital communications PR department right now that are all over the country. They applied, and we've been doing this all remote, because we wanted to still honor internships during this time. A lot of internships have been canceled during COVID. So it was a way for us to still honor that and try to provide students and individuals with an opportunity to learn and grow. But as I say to them, even every time I'm on an intro call and getting to know them, is, hey, your ideas are as important as mine in this club. Because you never know where the next great idea is going to come from. And you need people from all different backgrounds and all different diversity. And it might not be somebody, you know, strictly from the soccer world per se, or, you know, a manager or a VP or even a general manager that the next great idea can come from. So, you know, I always try to nurture an environment where everybody feels really open to sharing their ideas and putting things on the table.
And talk to us a bit about this pandemic, right? It's the way that it's affecting sport is unbelievable. How is it affecting you guys? What are you doing differently? You're not filling stadiums. It's a very challenging time. How are you guys handling it? And how are you guys thinking outside the box?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it goes without saying that it stinks. That's just the there's no way around
that's
that.
That's a tame word.
Yeah, I usually have a more colorful vocabulary, yes. But we'll save you from having to bleep me out. Yeah, this has been hard, without a doubt, in a variety of ways. And again, as somebody managing a club, you know, I have a role with amongst the players, our professional players and our technical staff, and overseeing them. So you've got sort of that side of things in and of itself, and concerned about them daily. This is, you know, for a pro athlete that was ready to go, came into season fit. We had 5 days of preseason. The team looked phenomenal out there on the field. Everybody was feeling good and fresh. And then we went into quarantine, and nobody knew how long it was going to be. And now we're drifting into 2 months at this point where our athletes are not in their normal training environment. They're isolated in their apartments. This is something they're unaccustomed to. They're used to being out amongst the fans and playing games and in competition. So we have taken a person first, player second mentality here. And we felt that there's no other answer. We have to start with them as people and make sure that we're looking after them just from a mental health standpoint. So we do a lot at this club over the last couple months. You know, obviously providing them training plans that they can do on their own, or doing some group yoga sessions and things like that. But we also have had just guest speakers come on to webinars. We've had, you know, somebody came on and talk about entrepreneurship this week. We had nutrition and sports psychology. We've got somebody talking about personal branding next week. So trying to do some other things that are outside the box just to take care of each other as people, you know, and not just as players. So, you know, there's so many different facets of this that I could talk about that have been a challenge. But as I said to my staff on day one, you know, when we knew we couldn't go back into the office, we just got to work right away, figured out Zoom, had never used it before. On day one, we had a staff meeting, and I looked at them and I said, I don't know how long this is going to last. This could be a week, this could be a month. We have no idea. This is unprecedented. But no matter whether we're going to be apart for 3 days or 300 days, we've got time now to look at things differently. So I basically told them all, you all have a new job now. Whatever job you had before may not exist right now, and I don't know when it'll come back. So we all have to do things differently. And the staff, you know, they've always been really nimble to this process, and that's what I appreciate about them. So we moved everybody into sort of a digital role. Everybody has a new role, either as a caretaker, you know, amongst our season ticket members or our fan base or our kids club community. We now feel like we're caretakers to our community and trying to provide them just a space to be happy. So long-winded answer, but there's a lot of different constituencies in this process that we've, I think at the end of the day, it's just having to look at things differently. And instead of constantly saying, oh, this sucks, oh, this is a challenge, oh, when are sports coming back? It's just saying, hey, this is where we're at right now. Let's embrace it. Let's do things differently. Let's try to speed ahead of all of our colleagues and our competition by innovating and doing things differently. And what's the next big idea? Because I think it's going to come out of this phase. The next big idea is at the table. And why not you? Why not you at Sky Blue? Why not this club? And I've challenged them to do that. And I'm really stoked about the content that's come out from this time.
Oh, and it's amazing too. It's, you get the creativity, you get the mind going and doing what you're doing with the Zoom meetings to really think a little bit differently. And I love the fact that you're doing updates with sports psychologists, nutritionists, and because everyone's going to take that a little bit differently and put their spin on it. But next thing you know, it's, you have content that's amazing. And like you said, taking care of the athletes, but also taking care of the fans as well, right? It's, people are looking right now, people are content hungry regardless. I think everyone's sick of Netflix. Everyone's sick of, no one watches the news anymore because it's the same thing over and over again. So what can we learn how to become better and personal development and everything else? So if that sounds super cool with what you guys are doing. What about, you know, shift gears a little bit. You're a big proponent of women in leadership in sport. Talk to us a bit about that and, you know, give us some statistics around it. We all know it's still a male-dominated society of that, and a lot of men are coaching women's sports. And, you know, I think it's just the opposite. It should be just the opposite. So talk to us a bit about women in leadership in sports and what's happening out there.
Yeah, I think for me, I've always said soccer is just the vehicle for me. I like sports, I like soccer, but at the end of the day, it's just a vehicle for me to a greater story to be told in women in leadership. So obviously I have a hand in women in leadership here within women's professional soccer, women's professional sports. But for me, sports are always under a microscope, and sports are really amplified, maybe not women's sports, because we know we're still sitting under 4% of typical coverage, which is a dire number. But sports are so heavily viewed. People are so passionate about sports. So if we can start to make little equitable changes amongst sports, there's always such a magnifying glass around it, and it's super amplified and people are paying attention to it. So for me, soccer has always just been the vehicle for a much bigger conversation about gender equity or the opportunities for women in leadership. And if we can change it in sport, we can make it something that feels normal. And it's still, unfortunately, it's not normal to have women in a lot of leadership roles. And when I say not normal, I don't mean it in the context of that it should feel odd for anybody, but we just don't see it enough. And we've got to make it the new normal. I think there's been plenty of studies around how diversity makes for good business. And that's not just lip service. That's real ROI on companies that have more diversified boards, have more diversified leadership, have a better return on investment. They make more money. It's that simple. It has to be the same in women's sports too. I mean, this is just another form of a business at the end of the day. So I think across the board, we have to have women's voices at the table. And not just women, but people across all lines of the spectrum, all colors. We need more diverse people sitting at the table, whether it's women's pro soccer or whether it's major corporations. It's going to lead to better business. And if you don't have all voices at the table, how are you going to be representative of your fan base or your buyers or your constituents? I think that's tremendously important. If we all look the same at the table, we're probably going to create something for people that look like us or that are similar to us. So we need to diversify at the end of the day. And it's up to not just women that are in leadership roles to do that. I recognize my responsibility as a woman, but I feel a lot of times there's a lot of, well, other women need to bring up women. I can't do it alone. I'm such a small percentage of women GMs in the world. If I was doing it alone, it's going to take 400 years for us to get anywhere close to equity. So we need other leaders to also bring up women and to see what an important role that is and not see it as a threat to their own position. At the end of the day, again, diversity is going to be good for business. So that's always been my motto and the thing I believe and going to keep pushing for it.
No, and I think that's key, right, is looking for different point of views. And I think especially women in athletics, they're going to bring a totally different point of view than guys into women's athletics. I was pretty fortunate. I went to a school in New Hampshire that was all female, and we're the second year of men because they had to, you know, diversify to stay alive.
I was going to say, but lucky for you.
There you go. So it was a school called Colby Sawyer, and there was a woman president. There's a woman athletic director. There are lots of women head coaches among the program. And it was, so for me, we saw it from a different angle. And then after that, I went to go coach at a large Ivy League school, and it was a totally different feel, right? It was a different take on things because women in leadership was part of sport. It was part of growing up. I have a degree in sport management, and that was, most of our teachers were female, and it was a great perspective to learn from. And when you start hearing about it from the other angle, it's like, huh, you know, I went to school. That was my education, seeing it. And I thought it was totally normal, and it was great because they could act as great role models for other women that were out there.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, absolutely. I actually teach a sports business class as well. And one of my colleagues who I met many years ago, we were both operations managers in women's pro soccer many years ago. She's gone on to be a professor. I'm an adjunct instructor in sports business in one of her programs. But she was talking the other day about how for 4 years she's been telling this student, you know, about sports business because she worked in it across a variety of sports teams and organizations. And the student, you know, never really followed through with what she was saying. But the student came back all proud one day because he had gone and talked to somebody at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and it was a male figure, and came back and said, "Oh my gosh." You know, and basically reiterated all the stuff she's been saying for 4 years. And she's like, you know, this is what it's like being a woman. You just, a lot of students even aren't going to believe what you're saying and believe that you've done that in the pro sports world, because it's not a normal thing to see. And that, on one hand, it's enraging. On the other hand, it's really sad that we have to go through that. But, you know, I try to make a point in my own class that the reality is the textbook that I use is not good. It's a brand new textbook. It's from 2020. I can count on both hands the number of women's sports mentions that are in there. And in the few that we had, there were errors in the content. I mean, I was jotting down notes for the authors. But this is the content that's also going to our students. There's such a data gap for women just across the board, not just in sports. And obviously we're speaking specifically to that right now. But yeah, I think it takes having a woman in this role, right? Me as an adjunct instructor, and I live it and breathe it every single day that I'm reading this book and going, wait, this is wrong. You know, it takes somebody living it and doing it, and maybe somebody that's seeing it with a different set of eyes, because I'm coming from my own experiences as a woman, to be able to say, this isn't quite right. So I'm going to have to add supplemental content to this, so my students are getting a better view of the world and a better view of sports as a whole from a more equitable standpoint.
No, it's true. And I have two daughters as well. So, and they're not soccer players, they're actually ski racers. And, you know, what's sort of funny is the role models for both men and women in ski racing are actually females, right? They're Lindsey Vonn, they're Michaela Schifrin. They're the ones who are in the press that they're seeing on the covers of magazines and everything else. And when I first started in ski racing, there were 10 women and 150 guys. Now you go to a ski race with the kids, there's 100 girls and 75 guys. It's totally flipped. And it's a great thing to see. And there's a lot more women who are coaching. There's a lot more role models. And I think that's starting to, you know, and I know skiing's a, you know, it's a little progressive, but I think a lot of people are doing it with soccer. They're doing it with a lot of other sports where, you know, the younger kids are growing up. And the high school where my daughter goes is a female athletic director. And I love it because it's a unique perspective that's out there. What about diversity in sport, right? You know, and I know we're talking about, you know, the women in leadership, but where are you seeing diversity in sport from all different, you know, race, color, gender, everything going? It's, you know, we know that's a big topic right now.
Yeah, I think historically, and, you know, I can speak to women's soccer specifically, and it was part of the reason, part of the catalyst for my own nonprofit that I was a co-founder of Gonzo Soccer, was that, you know, typically soccer in this country has been catered a little bit more towards that club model. You know, if you're going to get to the top, you've got to be on the best youth soccer club. Well, that's expensive. You know, I think about myself growing up, and I grew up in Iowa, so I'm actually a very odd choice to become a general manager of a pro soccer team coming from Iowa.
In New York, no less.
Yeah, I'm a strange choice for this whole pathway, to be honest with you. But, you know, I started at eight years old, co-ed YMCA team with a little t-shirt down to my knees, and I never played club soccer. And to be completely honest with you, I oddly was thinking about this morning. I wouldn't have had the means anyway, coming from a single parent family. You know, my mom wouldn't have been able to put me in club soccer. So I actually think I would have missed the whole boat regardless, because it is such a expensive proposition. And a lot of youth sports has gone that way now. So I actually believe that a lot of our talent is getting missed because of this pay to play model. Which is pretty devastating. And, you know, obviously there's been some challenges at US soccer in general lately, which I, you know, don't think I need to get into. Most people have seen them rather publicly. But I think it's a good time for us to reset the way we look at youth sports. And again, this pay to play model is leaving so many kids out of the system. And again, when the co-founder and I, Monica Gonzalez, started Gonzo Soccer in Chicago, you know, we went into Pilsen, which is typically a Latino neighborhood, and these girls didn't have access to any type of elite training at all. You know, their brothers were going to soccer practices, and they would just drag along with the moms and sit on the sidelines. And there were some really tremendous players in that pool that we were able to help develop, but they just weren't seen, didn't have the means, and really had nobody reaching out to them. So I used my own real life experience in Gonzo Soccer and what we were developing there as a sample to say that there are just so many players that get missed in this model.
And what about, this is a topic I like to bring up with everyone, and this is a great time to do it, is specialization, right? What do you think about the specialization? And soccer, we all know, is a hugely specialized sport because you can play it 24/7. It's not like skiing where it's actually getting similar, but the snow melts, right? So you got to go do something else. But specialization in sports such as soccer, in hockey, in baseball, and all of that at such young ages. What are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, I think, you know, based on the intro you gave of me, I have kind of a sporadic mindset. I like to do a lot of different things at once. It's just what keeps me happy and motivated. And I grew up that way in sports. You know, I didn't have any specialization. I wasn't on a club team. I no AAU. I wasn't on any of that. I just played at my school. So it was basically, and part of it, I'm sure, was just so my mother could keep me busy because, you know, she was off working. I had to go play every sport. But you know, I was playing volleyball, softball, basketball, soccer, ran track and cross country a few times just to fill in. You know, that's how I grew up and it worked out fine for me. And I never got burned out of one sport. I always enjoyed everything I was doing and I loved some sports more than others. So for me, I think it's important to look at each individual, and I know we're talking about kids, so it's hard for them to really be like, are you sure you really like this? Is this the one thing you want to specialize in? You know, for an 8-year-old, they don't know yet. You know, even I went to college to play basketball and I played soccer on the side and I ended up flipping my loyalties at some point. And here I am working in the soccer world, which again, as a kid from Iowa, is an unlikely story in general. So I think we need to leave the possibilities open and it can't be a parent thing, you know, a parent really driving the narrative of you're going to specialize in this one sport so you can become a pro, you know, talking to an 8, 9, 10 year old. I think the diversification is really important. I do think we also see some, especially in girls that are growing up, some overuse injuries, you know, kind of doing the same repetitive movements over and over in certain sports, can really lead to just injuries. And injuries are going to lead to burnout as well. So, I think it's important that we allow our youth opportunity to explore a lot of different things because you just don't know at those ages what's really going to develop their passion and what they're most excited about.
No, and I love that, right? The diversity side of the whole thing is so super important. And like you were saying there with injuries as well, because it's just doing the same thing over and over again, the rubber band's going to snap if you keep just keep stretching it over and over again, right? There's going to get to a point. What about, where do you see soccer going? What's the future of soccer? Obviously up here in New England, it's huge. I know from kids at 5 years old all the way up to through college and everything else. And now it's even for adults, right? It's a big thing. But where do you see the direction that it's going? Where do you see the sport, especially on the women's side? I, you know, when I think of soccer in the US, I think of the women's national team, right? I don't think of the men's national team because the performances are just way better. And it started back in the day with Mia Hamm and the 92 or 96 World Cup, right? When it just really started to taking off. But where do you see the future happening and going if we ever get back to sport?
Yeah, it's a big, broad question. I think we're going through a lot of, well, besides just the pandemic, which has put an unfortunate halt on a lot of things, but we've seen tremendous growth in the women's game. Even just over the last year, and when I say the women's game, I'm actually talking about women's sports as a whole, especially in this country. But specifically, if we want to talk about women's soccer, the world game is really starting to rapidly grow. And that's so exciting because that's going to push all of us to be better, especially in women's soccer. It's going to push the U.S. women's national team to be better, which is exciting. And around the world, we're seeing so many women's soccer teams fighting for pay equity or fighting for equal standards or better, maybe I shouldn't even say equal standards yet, but just better standard of treatment with the women's national teams or individual players like Ada Hegerberg, who sat out the World Cup and is one of the best players in the world, just to prove a point. We're seeing women really, really push the narrative in a lot of ways on equity. And all of those conversations, you know, I believe are going to lead to a better standard across the world. And that's just going to, you know, raise the tide for everybody in the game. So I think it's a tremendously exciting time for women's soccer. We're seeing a lot more monetary investment in it across the board and across the world, which of course is going to help increase the standards for the players. So it's all part of the cycle. So I have tremendous belief in women's soccer as a worldwide entity right now, but you know, specifically for me, I'm in the NWSL. We've made such tremendous changes over the last year. One of them bringing on a commissioner in Lisa Baird, and you know, that couldn't have been a day too soon. I think one of her first days on the job was basically when this pandemic really hit the U.S. So we're really lucky to have her in that role and her leadership in guiding our league through this. But I'd say right now I'm seeing tremendous growth in the women's pro game across the world. And then I will just say quickly too, obviously U.S. soccer is going through a lot of changes right now. And I think those are going to turn out to be very positive changes. I think there were some things there that even the battles between the Federation and the U.S. Women's National Team, which is just an unfortunate situation as a whole. I think, you know, we'd like to get to a resolution on that. But the U.S. Women's National Team has pushed the narrative, and I've heard of so many other women's players around the world that say they've looked to the U.S. Women's National Team as a source of inspiration because of what they're doing and the narrative that they're pushing, and they're rightfully so. So I believe across the board, we're going to see a lot of changes, especially at the youth level as well in soccer. Obviously the girls DA just folded. That was a pretty big thing by U.S. soccer. So we're going to see a lot of changes, but while some changes can be painful, I think they lead to growth. So I'm optimistic, excited. I'm excited to be a part of it. You know, being a GM of a women's pro team right now, obviously a little terrifying going through the pandemic, but, on the flip side, you know, we were going through such a positive phase of growth right now. And, you know, I know we're going to come out on the other side of this and, you know, hopefully do the best we can to pick up where we left off and continue to push this boulder up the hill.
And I think too, the crazy thing is, like you were saying earlier, it's you turned your team into a digital team, right? And I think it's actually a great opportunity to get outreach that you typically wouldn't get because you would just be focused on training, right? And going to practice for however many hours a day and come home and rest and eat and sleep and go back to the same thing. And I love that you're leading that way because I think that's going to create unique opportunities for women in sport or specifically for your team, because it creates a new level of outreach, a new level of communication and getting to, you know, the younger kids that are out there. Right. And allowing that. I know my kids are watching, you know, ski race dry land videos from a friend of mine who's putting them up online, but it's sort of the same thing. I think his reach is probably more than that, than his actual camps that he's running. It's because it's allowing people from all over the world. Never, all of a sudden you just became a global player that you didn't even know you became a global player by using the platforms that we're using in today's world. So it's exciting. And like I said, like you said, coming out of this, I think it's actually probably going to become better than we thought going in, because we just sort of got in our own little groove and our own little pace. And, you know, we've been thrown in a box and shaken up a little bit and see what comes out the other end.
Yeah, I think we could have, you know, the last 2 months basically just said, oh, shoot, this sucks. Nothing to do right now. And the reality is could have furloughed or laid off our staff, which we haven't done. We put everybody to work in a new role, and I'm grateful to our owners for their belief in me and in our staff for doing that. And I believe it's had a tremendous impact. I mean, almost daily, whether it's via social media or via direct email, you know, we're getting notes from our fans saying, thank you for doing that. Or thank you, I know that was silly, but like last night we had what we called yappy hour. We literally had a Zoom hour that was just bring your pet, you know, and some of our players came on with their pets and everybody brought their pets. And we had people afterwards saying, thank you. Like one of our nurse season ticket members who's having a really hard time and has been basically living at the hospital said she, you know, took an hour just to pop on, and looking at the pets made her happy. So, you know, we're doing really silly things too. You know, I believe in the background we're doing other big innovative things, but some days we're just doing things to put a smile on people's faces. And if that can resonate with Sky Blue and with our club and with the things we're doing, then I think that's going to have actually a tremendous long-term impact. So, you know, if we can make our fans smile every day right now at a time that's so hard for everybody, then I believe it's time really well spent.
No. Awesome. Awesome. So we're here coming up on a half hour. This has been great discussion. And where can people find you? Where can they find more about you? What you're up to, what you're doing?
That is a good question. I'm pretty active on the social media. My email is pretty public. I'm pretty easy to find. So at A. LaHue, just first initial, last name, on pretty active on Twitter and Instagram. So feel free to come chat at me there, or it's the same A. LaHue at skybluesoccer.com. My emails are always open. I do my best to respond to as many people as I can. I love to hear from fans and folks out there in the industry or folks looking to break into the industry. So yeah, try to be as accessible as I can. And then I know you mentioned I do the weekly women's sports business newsletter. I basically just curate women's sports business content from around the net that goes out every Wednesday. So if anybody would like to look at that, that's just womenxsport.com. You can go there to sign up, very easy, and that goes out every Wednesday.
Perfect. And thank you, Elise. This was awesome. I really appreciate it. We'll have to do a round two when this pandemic is over and see how you guys are up and running. But if anyone has any questions, comments, feedback as well, you can email me at kenthexecutiveathletes.com. Hopefully everyone's surviving well during this pandemic. Just remember to keep out there going to crush it and make sure you actually subscribe to the podcast. So again, Elise, this is awesome. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Ken.